Arnold's Garage. Today, something really unusual. I guess motorcycle royalty is how I'd have to express it. You've all heard of Glenn Curtis, the legendary aviator. Held a record at Ormond Beach back in the day on a V8 motorcycle, allegedly 136 miles an hour. I mean, pretty amazing story. This is not that bike. This is an exact hand-built recreation. It doesn't use anybody else's motor. Everything is made exactly the way Glenn Curtis would have done it. You can see the original Glenn Curtis bike. It hangs up in the Smithsonian Institute. This was built by a gentleman named Dale Stoner. Just, you know, one of those kind of guys we don't have anymore. You know, back in the 1900s and that beginning, there were the Wright brothers. There were so many guys like Dale doing things in garages and machine shops all around the country. And luckily, some of them still are. Let's meet him. Dale, come on in here, my friend. Just a beautiful piece of work. Nice to see
Hi,
you.
Jay.
Boy, when I first saw this, it's so impressive because it's not, and when you say a replica, sometimes it has somebody else's motor and somebody else's rear end. This is exactly the way he would have built it.
This is as exact as humanly possible.
Right.
The engine's the exact same bore stroke. I had an engine lent to me that I could tear apart and reverse engineer the chassis. And then I'm a member of the Curtis Museum, and I helped them, they helped me, and they gave me about 100 pages of literature that they've had throughout the years to make the chassis exactly right too. And this is as it would have shown on the race day.
And what part of the country are you from? Where did you build this?
I built it in Ohio.
Okay.
I've got a small home shop, machine shop right there, and my sons have got machine shops too.
Well, that's what people did before Netflix. They actually made things, you know, instead of just sitting home and watching another stupid movie. You get to do things like this. I mean, it is so brilliantly done. It's such an impressive piece of work, because a lot of times you see replicas and you go, oh, yeah, that looks kind of modern. Oh yeah, well, we got that from a Buick, and this looks kind of, this is, somebody said to me, why does it have dynamite wrapped around the seat? That's not dynamite, those are dry cells, right? How many volts is that?
it makes 6 volts, because we've got 4 1.5 volt batteries on each side, and then these are wired in series, and then of course here it's wired in parallel, so that's 6 volts for the ignition system.
Okay, now although Glenn Curtis did build motorcycles, this initially was just a test bed for an airplane engine, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so the idea was he wanted to test it out before he put it, test it on land before you put it in the air, I guess.
Well, that makes sense to me, doesn't it?
It makes a lot of sense to me, yeah. It's air-cooled. Now, how big a motor? It's 8-cylinder, obviously.
It's 4.4 liter.
Okay.
So that is not a small motor. That translates into a 268 cubic inch.
Right, okay, very nice. And what's compression ratio, 4.6, something like that?
It's low. I do not know what the compression ratio is, and I think it would be a little higher than it. It might be closer to 5 or 6.
Cast iron pistons or aluminum?
Aluminum pistons in my recreation. The original engine had cast iron pistons.
That's right, because aluminum pistons, those really started with W.O. Bentley. He was the first one to use them in aircraft in World War I, and everybody thought he was crazy, and then went, oh, he's not crazy.
They thought they would melt down, but
yeah,
they didn't.
Yeah, that was the idea. That was the idea. When this showed up at Ormond Beach in 1907, right?
1907. It was called the Speed Carnival. There were cars and other motorcycles there, but this wasn't allowed to run officially because it's not a standard bike. It didn't fit on the docket. The officials allowed him to run it. It made a one pass. They said 136 mile an hour. The second pass coming back, the history books say that he blew a drive shaft.
Okay. Because to set a record back in, as today, you had to do it in two directions.
Yes.
So if you went one direction, it was bragging rights, but it wasn't official. Did not
That's
go
right.
into the record books. Okay. I can't imagine going 50 miles an hour in this. This just seems, and you have absolutely no, well, I guess you have a rear brake. Is that this?
It is a rear brake. I call it a scrub brake.
Right.
It touches the tire, and kind of like a big bicycle.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Well, I remember as a kid, that'd be your generator. You put your foot against it, and the light would come on as you went down the road. Yeah. And that drive shaft, I would have thought it was chain drive, but I'm surprised that.
Well, the direction of the crankshaft,
right,
and we have to turn the tire a different direction than what the crankshaft's doing. So with the bevel gears in the back, that it does that.
And no lubrication. I guess you just lubricate it before you take off.
Well, a lot of machinery, like an old lathe, the gears run like this. They just put some grease on them and say it's good enough. And the same with the crankshaft gear and the camshaft gear in the front. They're just lubricated with a oil can or a grease gun.
And did this go on to be used in aircraft?
Yes, it did. Okay. And this bike's not only historically significant because of the land speed record that it set, but it's also a historically significant airplane motor. So this motor was put in the Junebug. The Junebug is the third airplane that the Aerial Experiment Association was a group of men that helped Curtis design and funded it. But then they had the Red Wing was the first airplane, and then the White Wing. But the Junebug's the historically significant because in July 4th of 1908, an airplane engine like this made the very first public flight in America. Scientific America magazine had a contest, and they had a silver cup that they gave for the first person that could fly an airplane more than a kilometer. And so the Junebug on July 4th of 1908 set that record, and they won $25,000 and the silver cup.
Wow, $25,000, that bought you two houses.
Yes,
back in,
a lot of money. Yeah.
Now, Gabriel Voisin, you're familiar with him, of course.
I'm not.
He's a Frenchman. He and the Wright brothers throw rocks at each other because he contends he's the first person to stand by a plane, hit the prop, get it spinning, get in, take off, fly in a circle, and land in the same place and shut off the plane.
Okay.
So he thought, he considered that the first aircraft flight, whereas the Wright brothers, a bunch of guys just kind of threw the plane and they kind of, and they kind of had this thing going back and forward, which was interesting. Now, was Glenn Curtis, I guess he was certainly in the period with the Wright brothers. Did they kind of know each other? Did they hang out?
There was a rivalry there because of the patent wars. The Wright brothers had the patent of controlled flight, and they were using wing warping, but Curtis invented a different way of doing it, and it's what we use today with airplanes. It's called the aileron.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yes, and it makes it so you can bank the airplane. An airplane won't make a curve unless it's like a motorcycle or a bicycle. It has to bank so that it can turn.
Right.
Well, those ailerons are what does that. Yep. And Curtis is the inventor and has the patent on the aileron.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And of course, being air-cooled, you would think maybe the rear cylinder would run hotter than the front ones, but they all tend to run the same temperature, do you think?
Well, I think the back ones probably run hotter. A four-cylinder inline motorcycle, the back cylinder runs somewhat hotter than the front ones because they have more air flow across them. So this has to be the same, I believe.
Is that a Schliebler carburetor?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Now, is that off-the-shelf item, or did you have to make this?
No, I did not make that. One of the club members gave those carburetors to me, and that's a pretty common carburetor. They're still on eBay, and I had to buy another one on eBay to get enough parts. The history book that I've got says that he used was a Schliebler carburetor.
This is my favorite period of American history. You just had so many guys working, every month they'd get Scientific America or Popular Mechanics when they'd learn something and they would apply their own thing to it, just as you did. I mean, I've seen that picture of your shop and it looks like something the Wright brothers would still be working in. I mean, it's in the field and it's nothing around it, and you got your lathe and all the tools you need to make. The whole idea that you could be totally self-sufficient, you could make your own machinery. Now people can't fix a flat tire. But, the idea that you can just look at it, are you pretty much a... Yeah, that's exactly, one ten-thousandth. I mean, you...
I've got precision measuring tools.
Yeah.
And I've got a mixture of old tools and new tools, like your shop, I've got an anvil that is old, but then the newer machinery that I've got is a CNC milling machine,
right,
and the really good software to accommodate the CNC machine.
It's a shame that we used to have some wonderful vocational schools in this country, and we still do. We have McPherson College, where they teach a lot of these skills. But it's sad to see so much of America lose these skills. It's like gear cutters, you know. When I had my 1913 Mercer Raceabout, it used to be a place called Fisher Gear. And downtown, I go down with all my busted gears. It's gonna be about a week. Okay, thank you. And I come back and I got all, put it together, all my thing. And that got sold to India, all the tooling. I went down one day and it was gone. The whole thing had been sold and sent to India. And there's nobody that makes those gears anymore.
It's so disappointing. Yeah. And I had to make my own gears in the back too. I thought, there's lots of custom gear manufacturers still on the internet. So I contacted a couple of them. They didn't respond with me. And I thought, this is an easy set of bevel gears to do in the back. Both of the gears have the same number of teeth. It is a 75 degree angle instead of a 90, but I couldn't find anybody. So I had to learn and study, and I learned that on YouTube and bought some gear cutters and made it myself. Of course, I worked around gear cutting manufacturing myself, too.
Well, that's terrific. And you were with GM for a number of years.
I was with GM for 20 years.
Okay. And what did you do? Engine blocks, machinery?
It was a foundry, so they made engine blocks and heads. I started as a millwright, which is and I worked in the fabrication department. We made stairways and platforms, and I was a pipe fitter for some of that time. Half my career was a millwright, half of the career was in the pattern shop, and I really wanted to get in the pattern shop because I was still hungry to learn new technology. I hadn't run CNC machines before, and so I learned the software and the machinery there. All the machinery before that was hand-operated, hand-operated Bridgeport and that.
So when you were a kid and you started there, I imagine they had the old guys that had been there for years.
Oh, yeah.
And now you're one of the old guys.
No, I'm one.
Do you feel like one of those guys? Do you remember meeting those guys and thinking, I'm never going to know what they know. And now you do, and now you have to pass it on.
Well, but there's other people that know lots of stuff, too, that I don't know. Right. And so some of this, you know, nobody builds everything themselves. And I say, I built the entire bike. But like the crankshaft, I had a friend make the wood pattern. We've got a job shop foundry that casts the crankshaft. But then I bring it back and I do all the machining except for the finished grind that I sent out to a crankshaft grinding shop. The heads are 3D printed sand. I made a CAD model on my CAD system. That 3D model was sent to the pattern shop. They made a 3D printed sand mold. Then it went to, that got shipped to the same foundry that did the crankshaft, and then they poured into that sand and made the heads. The cylinders are billet, the product's called Durabar. The crankcase, same job shop foundry did the crankcase and the oil pan, so they did all of those parts, four different parts.
What is the metal on the cylinders? It's not Inconel or anything like that.
It's called Durabar.
Durabar.
Yes. And so you can buy, we bought Durabar, it's called G2 is the rating for that. So now it hones and so I machined the cylinders in a CNC lathe and then had to do the bolt, the stud holes and some other processes, but then I left it a little undersized to the pistons and then the local engine shop honed them to fit the pistons and rings.
No, that's great. You know, I have my Doble steam car next door, and that has two turbine blades back to back. When the steam goes, spin the turbine blade, which spins the fan, which cools the steam, goes into the condenser, the fan cools it, turns it back into the organ. And the blades are all corroded, you know. And I found the name of the company. I called the company, you know. I said, can I speak to the boss? What's about? Oh, okay. And I said, this is built by your company in 1920. He goes, yeah, that was my grandfather. I said, oh, that's great. Yeah, can you make me? He goes, no, we can't do that now. So I figured, I'll shame the guy. I said, so what you're saying is your grandfather with simple hand tools could make something you can't. Then he swore at me for about 10 minutes. Said, I just send me the thing. And then he took it as a personal, and he made them, and they were perfect.
Good.
But it just made me laugh. It just made the idea that we could do something years ago. Oh, we can't do that now. So what is it, lost? Is it lost technology? What's the reason,
Sometimes I'm awed when I look at this technology. I think myself, well, how did they make that? And sometimes I have to read and study and learn. But that's part of the fun of having a challenge and a passion passion for building something like this.
And there's a certain conceit that comes with a younger person said, you know, back in the 90s, people were really stupid. I go, really? They're really stupid in the 90s? And it just sounded so ridiculous because he was like 25. And
right.
The 90s were 100 years ago.
Yeah.
It just made me laugh. That's why you should go to McPherson College. That would reinforce your, make you feel better about the fact that all these things are still being done. Because they do a four-year restoration degree. You learn magnetos, you learn antique painting techniques, you learned exactly the way it was done, you know, so you can recreate these things. Well, let's get back to the bike. You have pneumatic tires, which it had at the time,
yes,
right? And the tires are white because that's the color of rubber, isn't it?
Yes, at that time, yes.
I think white tires were stronger because there's no dye, there's nothing to deteriorate the rubber or cause it to, you know.
Okay,
very nice. What do you want, about 40 pounds in there?
45
pounds, okay. Okay, is it a kickstart or push start?
Well, I've made an electric one so that I knew that when it was brand new and tight, that it would start hard and that the tune might not be perfect. But now what I do now is I usually warm it up with my electric start, but I can kickstart it. The kickstarter is like a little hand crank for an earlier car that would be hand crank, but
right.
I've got a kick pedal on it.
Okay.
And it when the motor starts, it just pushes the kickstarter off.
And it's, of course, a flathead design, right? And
then, it's actually an F-head.
Oh, it is an F-head. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, I see. Yes, I see. Okay.
Yep. Or known as an IOE, intake over exhaust.
Intake over exhaust. I see that. Very nice. Yeah. Well, it's a cool-looking motor, I must admit. And the angle of this drive shaft, it seems so... It looks unprecise, but obviously it's not. I mean, it's just pretty amazing the way it...
Oh. It works.
Look at that. Boy, that's beautiful workmanship. That really is. Boy, that's really something.
And very, very little play here. You know, you have to have some, but...
I think Schwinn, when the bicycle craze, which started, I guess, around 1890, they had this type of... I thought chain would come first, but this was actually quite popular, and it worked pretty well.
Yes, I don't remember the bicycle company's name, but yes, there was a bicycle that had a drive shaft and
double gears. Okay. And that, God, that's a beefy looking joint here. Is that just an automotive piece?
I took the liberty, knowing that the original U-joint broke, and I didn't want to get embarrassed because I wanted to ride it and actually use it.
Right.
And when I did the research with Google on U-joints, I found out even a Model A or a Model T's U-joint looks pretty wimpy.
Yeah.
So that's a 1200 series U-joint that would be used on like a Mustang or a Camaro.
And what is your oiling system? Is it a splash?
The original splash.
Right.
So the engine is identical with bore, stroke, cam profile, valve size, and port size. That's all identical. The liberties that I took is when I took the original motor apart, it really kind of scared me because they used bronze aluminum connecting rods. They had the rod cap had a pie piece cut out of them so that they were trying to dip the connecting rod through the ice cube tray and pick up oil.
Right.
But that original engine, well, they were just lucky it didn't blow up because it was so sloppy loose, and the crankshaft was blue and scored up like you couldn't believe. The pistons and the valves were all in good shape. And I thought, I'm not going to do that. So I took the liberty of having a better oiling system. I've actually got a small oil pump on the back that I have pressurized lube that goes through the crank and lubricates all the rods in that.
So, and a spray type deal?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, because the splash system would be.
Oh, it's inadequate.
Yeah. They used to be total loss. You just fill it up and you drive it until it's smoking.
That's why those engines didn't last very long. So the liberties I took is better materials, better oiling, and better balancing. I've got counterweights, but there's no flywheel. The flywheel would have been, with the airplane engine, would have been the propeller.
Oh, that's right. I just realized that. Okay, no flywheel at all. Okay. So when you shut it off, it stops right now.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. Now, is this magneto? Is this
It's like the indent, and watch the throttle.
Oh, this is throttle on this side.
Yeah, it's like.
Oh, so now the throttle's on the other side.
Check this out, how it pulls the cables on the inside of the handlebar. And so you have to have a teeter-totter mechanism to make the other one go the opposite way.
Yeah.
And this one is the spark advance. So then you can see the distributor.
Okay, it's the exact opposite of.
It's,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's always good. Riding an unfamiliar bike with reverse controls.
Yeah.
So that's good.
But you can clearly see that in the pictures on the beach that the right-hand grip is the spark advance.
It just seems like sand would just eat this up after one run, doesn't it? I mean, you're just throwing sand from the beach.
Well, what I didn't do is on the original picture on the beach, they have a piece of a tarp or something in the front to cover up the glass on the distributor.
Oh, okay. Now, did you go visit the original at the
The Curtis Museum, they had all of the information. They gave me about 100 pages of literature that had pictures and dimensions because they restored the one that was in the Smithsonian now. We made copies of all of that. I've got really good software that I could measure things and of course, then I've got theirs that I worked with there at the Curtis Museum.
When Glenn did his run with this, it just made all the papers and the sensation and how fast it went. And did that increase the sale? Do people rush to buy these now, these motors, these aircraft motors?
I don't know. But what we do know is that this motor went on to be in the June Bug, and the June Bug was the very first, we thought it was the first public flight in America because he won the Scientific America.
Right. Now, Glenn Curtis, he actually produced twin-cylinder and single-cylinder motorcycles as well, correct?
That's correct.
Was it because, wow, look at all the publicity I got with this, I should make motorcycles, or was he into motorcycles first?
He was into the motorcycles first.
Oh,
so
okay.
his first motorcycle was in 1902, but the brand name was called Hercules. And so that name had already been taken. So in 1904, he stopped using the Hercules name and it went to Curtis for 1905. So after 1905, all the bikes were Curtis's. Now, the dirigible guys kind of found him because he made the lightest, strongest, most durable little two-cylinder motorcycle engines. And those went into a lot of dirigibles. I think the California Arrow was one of them, and that was a historical dirigible. So then he got involved in the aircraft stuff because that it was more profitable. Mm-hmm. And so he dropped the motorcycles in 1909. The name picked up, then it changed to Marvel. His workers took that portion of the business.
Does the Curtis name still exist in aircraft?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, to this day.
Later on, with the patent wars, there was trouble, and the government needed airplanes, and they got tired of it. And I think the 20-year patent thing was off, so they forced the two companies to join. So today, that is known as Curtis Wright.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah,
that's pretty exciting. And are there people still descendants of Glenn Curtis connected with the company, do you know?
I do not know.
Okay. Did he have children?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
How long did he live, do you know?
He died young. I think he was 52 years old.
Okay.
He was born in 1878.
Right. Okay. Did he die because of machinery?
I think appendicitis.
Oh, appendicitis. Okay. Well. All right, very good. Now, what is this? Is this oil in here?
So we've got two tanks.
Right.
This small tank is the oil tank.
Right.
This tank is the gas tank.
So do you just fill the oil tank and then you drive? Is this total loss?
Not any longer. It would have been then.
Yeah.
Because I've made it so it's a dry sump and it's a recirculating.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
So if you want to take a long trip, you know, go
400
miles.
If I want to put 100,000 miles on it or something.
Yeah, you don't want to New York City from Buffalo.
It also has an oil filter.
And an oil filter. Ooh, Mr. Fancy.
It's all hidden.
Yeah.
But I snuck that in there.
And how does this geometry feel to you when you drive it? Because this is pretty much just guesswork, wasn't it, putting this together?
Yes. Well, you know, even the history books say that Curtis had this ready to go, and he shipped it to Ormond Beach in January, but they had a foot of snow on the ground, so they had to shovel the snow out of the way. He hadn't rode it, and so they gave the employees gave him a push downhill from one building to the next and said, yep, I guess it handles well enough.
Yeah.
So they loaded it up in the train and went to Ormond Beach. When they got to Ormond Beach, they found out that apparently they were in a hurry for the train. They got to Ormond Beach, and what they learned was that Curtis's Curtis carburetor that he used on twin-cylinder motorcycles weren't big enough. So Thomas Baldwin then went and found one of the car guys that they borrowed two of these Schebler carburetors off of, and then Tank Waters was the one helper, and they were able to connect these Scheblers on there. The other problem that they had was the batteries, and they didn't have enough ignition, so the batteries got strapped on at the event.
Right.
And so this is just like race day. After the race day, it was a really good advertising thing, and the seat changes in the pictures later with the advertising. It's a conventional seat instead of this, and the luggage rack thing to hold the seat changes too for advertising.
Yeah, it's just a classic looking, enormous wheelbase too, isn't it, for a motorcycle?
Oh, yeah. Why, yes.
Yeah, it's just a great look. It just looks like it's going fast.
Not standing still.
Yeah, see, if you were a 12-year-old boy, this was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just been like the craziest, fastest thing in the world. It's just such a fascinating period because these guys all knew one another. You mentioned Tank Waters. I remember reading all those names as a kid growing up. Like, I always find it fascinating that I believe Charles Lindbergh was at the Apollo when we went to the moon. He was at Cape Canaveral.
Yes.
And it just, I mean, think about that.
As when I was a boy, I watched the Spirit of St. Louis on TV.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was really inspired that if you work hard and you do what you're supposed to, you can accomplish amazing things.
Yeah, well, I was thinking like when Charles Lindbergh's at Cape Canaveral and they're going to the moon, he go, you know, I went to Paris. Yeah, my wife and I went last weekend. You know, no, I flew. I mean, it seems so, now everybody does it.
Yes.
Just seemed, but at the time, he was the most famous person in the world. It was unbelievable to fly from New Jersey to Paris nonstop.
Yes.
It was just seen as the greatest feat ever, you know.
Well, and Curtis, too, he was known as the fastest man on Earth.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right. On Earth. Well, very good. Can we fire it up?
Yes.
All right. I am anxious to hear this run.
Yes.
Here we go.
Floor.
I blew. Oh,
yeah, you blew a spark plug cap.
Oh, yeah.
Plug came off right here.
Okay, all right. I'm glad you caught that.
Any others come off? Let's see.
You know what? We'll fix that. But I'm sorry, I messed up your floor, Jay.
Oh, that's no. It's hilarious. Damn kids with their motorcycles.
Yeah, I was one of them long-haired hippie-type persons.
Well, you got the name for it, Dale Stoner.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I got a friend that is in last name Sick, and so we've kind of thought that we should start a business, you know, and have the
Sick and Stoner,
the Sick Stoner mental health facility. What do you think?
It works for me.
Yeah.
All right, let's fight. Hop on.
If you can, sure.
All right, here we go. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, this is hilarious. Okay.
Let's open this up a little more. Let's see. Set that. Okay, here we go. Yep, I'm sorry. Well, hope you didn't catch that.
Well, not to worry about having children now.
Apparently there was too much oil in the crankcase,
right.
And then the pump pumped it back into the tank, and then the tank overflowed because I had too much oil in it. So we're gonna have to draw some out.
We'll drain some water, let's do it. Okay, how much you wanna take out?
No, lower it down about that much.
Okay, here we go. Can you see how far you wanna go down?
Keep going. A little more. That's good.
Okay.
Let's stop and take a look. I have my dipstick that we need to be within range. Okay, here. Let's try it.
Okay. Well, Ali, I think we put too much oil in.
Yes, I did. So I think we've got that resolved.
Okay.
I think we should try to start it again.
Well, Dale, that's just an incredible piece of history. I would love to take it for a ride. I just can't really stop it. I have no idea what, I'm just afraid I would dump it if I did, but just an amazing piece of work. Thanks for saving a piece of history. You know, guys like you, it's really important. I wish we had a lot more of them. So God bless you, my friend. Nice work.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
You.
Very cool. 1907.
Oil, gas. Gas, ignition, things are set, it should start.